The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
As Russian forces retreat from the area north of Kyiv, in their wake, scenes of utter destruction.
Why?
Crazy.
Very crazy.
The dead also lay in the open. Ukrainian National Police showed us this mass grave in Bucha, saying they believed up to 150 civilians might be buried here, but no one knows the exact number. People killed while the Russian army occupied this town. Video from Bucha shows bodies in the streets after Russian forces left the area. Some images even show bodies with hands tied behind their backs.
Зв'язали руки, поставили на коліна до стіни, постріл в голову і все.
This is civilians. They've been shot in the head with a tight hands behind their back. This is genocide of the Ukrainian population.
Some horrific scenes captured on video there in Ukraine over the weekend. And, of course, stepping back and looking at the bigger picture here, just what your Bible has to say regarding Vladimir Putin, the prophesied Prince of Rosh. We have a booklet that goes by that title. He is on the march. And as we've been covering in recent weeks, Europe's response to this, even though Western nations have in large part enabled Putin's advances, now they're building their military. Now Europe knows they can't trust the United States for security any longer. And so Bible prophecy moves forward at lightning speed. It's all unfolding exactly the way Herbert W. Armstrong prophesied decades ago. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show at CRN Digital Talk Radio. Channel 3 on that platform carries the live audio stream out every single day to 11 million homes in the United States. To get to the live video stream, however, you have to go to our very own website. That's thetrumpet.com. TheTrumpet.com/live takes you right to the live stream page, and you can also get to some of those podcasts that are posted after the fact. If you'd care to listen or view the program on demand, well, lost amid all of the carnage coming out from Ukraine, Russia has essentially admitted defeat in Kyiv. They're in the midst of a rapid retreat at the moment. And that has gotten some coverage over the weekend, but some of these images, of course, have superseded that. But with respect to Kyiv, what's happening there, it's the clearest sign yet, as Richard was saying in his news gathering this morning, that things didn't go as well as Putin had hoped with this invasion. Of course, this is just one city, and while they've lost the battle, Russia, that is, they've lost the battle of Kyiv. They certainly haven't lost the war, and you can begin to see those same Russian troops, I'm sure, redeploying to the Eastern Front. But that would mean Ukrainian forces are also going to be able to move in that direction as well. So I'm sure there's, even though they're in the midst of these peace talks, I'm sure there is some heavy fighting that will continue. In recent days, I forget which day it was exactly, but this Ukrainian strike on that, I think it was an oil depot, actually in Russian territory, President Zelensky was asked about this on one of the Sunday talk shows here in the States over the weekend, and he basically said he had no comment. He wasn't going to comment on any of their military strategies or any of their military advances. In any event, it's been widely reported that Ukraine was able to strike even within Russian territory, and this, of course, was a huge embarrassment for Vladimir Putin. It represented a major failing on the part of his army invading Ukraine, and then to have Ukraine strike in Russia. In any event, the retreat seems to be operating in good order. The troops coming out of Kiev, and as I say, redeploying to the east to concentrate on Mariupol and some of those other cities that you've also heard in the news. In Richard's news stack from Edstone, there was an interesting piece about, you know, how hopeful the West is that this war will turn the Russian people against Vladimir Putin. But there was this piece in, I think it was at BBC. It's a former BBC journalist, in any event. And he's talking about the Russians' response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And he makes the point that Vladimir Putin has actually used this attack to consolidate support at home. He refers to this high-ranking Russian official who wasn't especially supportive of Putin's incursion into Ukraine early on, but now he is enthusiastically on the side of Vladimir Putin. And this article says, this again comes from a former BBC journalist, it says, Putin's dream of a consolidation among the Russian elite has come true. These people understand that their lives are now tied only to Russia, and that's where they'll need to build them. It says, Russian society, my sources tell me, has also rallied in support of Putin's actions. Further on, the article says, in the first days, people took to the streets and signed open letters and petitions, while nationally renowned artists, directors, writers, and public figures spoke out against the war on social networks. It says, this did not last long. This didn't last long. According to the pro-Kremlin, All-Russian Center for Public Opinion, 74% of Russians support the special military operation in Ukraine, while the level of trust in Putin has increased from 67% to a multi-year high of 80% since the operation began. Now, you have to take those figures, I'm sure, with a grain of salt. It's a pro-Kremlin, All-Russian Center for Public Opinion. But still, this goes against what you've heard in the West, that the whole world, I covered that other survey for you last week or the week before, you know, the West going on about how the whole world is against Putin. And if you just look at the population of the world and the nations that really are supportive of Vladimir Putin, it's about half and half. That's the truth. But coming back to these disturbing images, all indications are that Russian soldiers have been in there, obviously killing people. There's dead bodies all over the streets of that. I forget the city that was mentioned in that montage. But they're killing, they're torturing, people's hands tied behind their backs. There's evidence of rape, women that are naked, basically, and dead. This is all going on in Ukraine. President Zelensky, by the way, he singled out Angela Merkel, the former Chancellor of Germany, and Nicolas Sarkozy for their support of Putin. The Frenchman and the former Chancellor of Germany. He says, I invite Ms. Merkel and Mr. Sarkozy to visit Bucha to see what the policy of 14 years of concessions to Russia has led to. As we've covered on this program, there's lots of tough talk, even coming from the United States, but very little action. And really, what as Zelensky brings out, the policies in the West, whether it's from Germany or France or the United States, except that four-year period with Donald Trump, when he went over there and said, hey, Europe, pay your dues. We don't want a Nord Stream pipeline to help Russia. You should be buying gas from the United States. We're protecting you. Except for that four-year period, though, the West has helped Putin in his advance. They funded it. They funded it in many ways, even through this latest iteration of the Prince of Russia's adventurism. He's rebuilding the Soviet Empire And he said as much decades ago. And one thing about tyrants, one thing about these radical extremists, they tell you what they're going to do. It's just that our naive leaders, our ambassadors for peace, as the Bible calls them, they won't believe them. They won't take them at their word. They won't listen to what the mullahs are saying in Iran. They haven't listened to what Vladimir Putin has said. My father has listened. You can look at our booklet, The Prince of Russia. See some of the comparisons that my father makes in there. I'll come to that here in just a second. But notice this from the Wall Street Journal. And again, this aligns with the montage you just saw. It says, when the Russian military forces abandoned Bucha, it left streets littered with bodies of civilians. Human Rights Watch on Sunday released a report saying there were instances of rape and summary executions in Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine, including Bucha, as well as other alleged crimes. It says Ukrainians were finding people with hands tied behind their backs and decapitated, kids who were killed and tortured, Ukrainian President Zelensky said in an interview. It says Bucha's mayor, well, it just talks about some of the figures they're finding, individuals, people buried in mass graves. It says Ukraine's prosecutor general's office said Sunday that 410 bodies of civilians had been removed from the areas of Kiev and had been retaken in recent days, or the region that had been retaken in recent days. So they're finding stacks of bodies, hundreds and hundreds of bodies, as these Russian troops retreat and are redeployed elsewhere. Now, looking at the Prince of Rosh, I think we have that here. We used to. Maybe not. Here it is. Here it is. The prophesied Prince of Russia. A quote from that booklet here. It says, I was certainly right in my prediction that, this is my father writing, in my prediction that Russia would also get control of Ukraine. I knew because Putin has a long pattern of diabolical evil on the level of Joseph Stalin. It says, an abundance of fruits prove that. The Bible states, by their fruits you shall know them. See, it's so easy to be deceived by words, by pleasant-sounding words, but the Bible says that we have to look at the fruits. What has been the fruits? It says here, President Putin has military might and the will to use it. America has the power but lacks the will to use it. And so that's what we've seen. We've seen America. And also, as Zelensky pointed out, we've seen France, we've seen Germany appease this madman, this tyrant. Says here, that's why we grovel before this evil empire, as President Ronald Reagan once called it. No leader in Russia has equaled Putin's diabolical evil since Joseph Stalin. My father was talking about that many, many years ago. And now you see some of our commentators beginning to catch up to that forecast. There's another verse, by the way. Just look at Isaiah 33 and verse 18. My father mentioned that by their fruits you shall know them. That's Matthew 7 and verse 20. But in Isaiah 33 and verse 18, it says, thine heart shall meditate terror. And God really does want us to just try to wrap our minds around some of these images that we're seeing. And it does happen all over the world. But in most cases, we just kind of push it aside, or we concentrate on other things. We focus on other things. But every once in a while, and you have to wonder about the motives of some of these commentators and talking heads, but every once in a while they do focus in on some of these atrocities. If only man would meditate on this terror that we see all around us. In a sermon my father gave back in 2013, he says that's the way this world is. We can't just shut it out of our minds and go watch television or read a book or go see some sporting event. When we see terror, we have to contemplate these things. We have to go to God and say, what is happening? Where is this leading? My father said this, how much time do you meditate on terror? How much time do we think on this? How prepared are we, just even emotionally, for what's coming on this whole earth? It says here, this is from, a 2013 lecture, can you meditate terror, really come to grips with Ezekiel 5 and those terrifying events that are going to come upon our people? Can we face reality? Can we really face reality? God's trying to get our attention. God's trying to get us ready for what's coming. I mean, you think about meditating on terror, Isaiah 33 and verse 18, my father in that lecture, he referred to these prophecies in Ezekiel 4 and 5. Again, if you don't have this booklet, make sure you call our operators today and request the Prince of Russia, the toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada. It's 1-866-930-3024. Here's one of our Western commentators. I believe he's on the scene in Ukraine. Listen to his take from over the weekend, clip 11.
We are past the point of sanctions and strongly worded condemnations and the seizing of oligarchs' mega yachts. It's no longer sufficient as the evidence of war crimes and crimes against humanity continue to grow. Vladimir Putin has no regard for life or humanity or even the rules of war. He's proven that time and time again, and he has also pursued the indiscriminate killing of civilians time and time again, twice before in Ukraine and in Chechnya. The global world order and potentially democracy's survival hang in the balance. If this isn't the kind of moment that the United Nations and NATO and the UN and the G20 and the Council of Europe and the G7 were made for, what is the point of these alliances if not to stop this? The world cannot sit by as Vladimir Putin continues this reign of terror.
In case you didn't recognize him, that's the same commentator who stood in front of a burning city, Minneapolis, and said, yeah, it's mostly peaceful. People here in the States might be able to take someone like that a little more seriously if he wasn't so selective in his outrage. Like I say, you have to wonder about some of the motivations of these commentators, these talking heads. As a whole, you know, being here in the United States, I think that you hear the Ukraine carnage is we're seeing some of the most shocking scenes of all in this war. And for the most part, Americans have just kind of moved on from this. I think there was a strong contingent early on that said, well, okay, it's horrible, but it's not our war. It's not our fight. It's not our conflict. Now, I think you see it even in the commentary. There's just not as much of an emphasis on it. He's maybe an exception here. But he's going on about all of these organizations, the G7, the NATO, the United Nations. What good are these organizations? And in a lot of ways, he's right. I mean, what has the United Nations done to stop war, to prevent war? What did NATO do in this case? Look at Putin's enablers. Look at Sarkozy. Look at Angela Merkel. Look at Biden and Obama. Look at Obama leaning over to Medvedev. Remember that scene in 2012? Just give me a little more time after the election, and I'll have some more flexibility. And then Hillary for all of her tough talk yesterday, she wants World War III, fine. But she was the one who said, hey, we want a big reset with Putin. We want to start all over. It was Barack Obama who mocked Mitt Romney in 2012 for saying his foreign policy ideas were from the 1980s. Russia's old news. What are you worried about Russia for? And now it's Russia, Russia, Russia. And now you've got the guy that stood in front of Minneapolis as it was burning, saying we need a war. We need the UN. We need NATO to go to war against Russia. Well, where were you when you should have been sounding the alarm? When America's cities were going up in flames, or even now with respect to the invasion, the full-scale invasion of the United States at the southern border. Toward the end of the day on Friday, it was the Biden administration that announced that the U.S. had or was planning to revoke Title 42. It's a Trump-era policy that basically allowed border agents to send migrants back on public health grounds. Look, we're in the midst of a pandemic. You can't just come walking into our country. So Biden comes along and says, you know what? I know we've had 2 million people come into the United States last year. I'd like to see it more like 5 or 6 million. So we're going to do away with Title 42. Just open the floodgates. And look, they're not just coming in from Central America and Mexico. There's people from Cuba. There's people from Ukraine. There's people from all over the world flying to Mexico because they know that they have an open invitation to come into the States, and they can fly anywhere in the United States on the government's dime, the taxpayers' expense. Is that a crisis? Or is there just one crisis in the world? Is it just Ukraine? Or is the world meditate on this terror, if you will? Meditate on what's happening in American cities, at the southern border, in Ukraine, what Germany is doing in response to Putin's march. God says we better get emotionally prepared for this. Listen to the senator from, I think he's from Tennessee, Bill Hagerty. He was on with Maria Bartiromo yesterday, clip 4.
The leadership came out to tell the Border Patrol agents that indeed the President of the United States has decided to lift the Title 42. That's the last tool that they have left to send people back to, you know, back across the border. There was just a complete cloud of depression that fell over the room, Maria. That's the last tool left. They're already overwhelmed. They've got capacity to process perhaps 5,000 coming across the border. They're now getting 7,000. This could go to 15, 18,000 overnight.
So right now, border agents told me that they're apprehending about 5,000 to 7,000 people a day. Actually, Brandon Judd said it was 7,000 people a day in the last several weeks. He said, and other border agents have told us, they're expecting that number to shoot up to 18,000 people a day.
Can you believe this? What is going on? Is this incompetence? You mean we're going from 5,000 to 6,000 per day to 18,000? You mean we're going to go from 200,000 illegals per month streaming into the United States, and we're going to up that to 500,000-600,000? That's right. That's right. Title 42, May 23rd. That's the day it's over, and the gates are fully and completely open for entrance into the United States. You can expect something like 500,000 illegal border crossings per month. Per month. 5 to 6 million per year. Per year. That's the size, population-wise, of many states. It's bigger. It's quite a lot bigger than Oklahoma. 5 to 6 million illegals? And you look at some of these pictures yesterday on Maria Bartiromo's show. These trucks full of young men fleeing what? I mean, they've got the money to make the trek. They pay the coyotes. They pay the cartels. And they get into the United States. Are they fleeing from a Ukraine-style war where people are being slaughtered and left for dead in the streets? Maybe in a few rare cases they are, but in most cases, no. It's people saying, hey, I could go and get free money? Well, of course I'm going. I've got enough money right here, right now, where I am to pay the coyote. Let's go. Let's go. Women and children, if we can, but if not, hey, I'm a young single man. I'll just waltz right into the United States. No problem. It's wide open. Listen to the Secretary of State, Antonin Blinken, this is why they revoked this or suspended this. It's anything connected to Trump, of course, has to be set aside, trashed, changed, overturned, whatever. And here's the reasoning behind it, clip 5.
The Biden administration announced this week that you will lift a Trump era pandemic restriction called Title 42, which restricted immigration at the southern border. It comes as your administration says there could be up to 18,000 apprehensions of undocumented migrants per day. Does the administration see an influx of migrants as a problem? And can you guarantee that they will be treated humanely?
Well, Donna, first, when it comes to Title 42, all along we've been following the science. That's what this is about.
Oh, so now it's about the science. As if 2 million illegals last year wasn't bad enough. Now, you see, it's the science that tells us it needs to be 5 or 6 million. 5 or 6 million illegals. This was, what did that senator say? The last tool that border agents have left to send people back home. Title 42. Biden and Blinken come along and say, we got to do away with Title 42. We got to let everybody in. We're about to see border agents flee the scene because they can't get it under control. They can't do anything. They don't have any authority to send people back. It's all about the science, they told us, for 2 years. To stay locked up in your house. To send 5-year-old Johnny off to school in a mask for 8 hours. Science! It's all about the science. And now the science says, hey, it's not any kind of a risk to let in 5 or 6 million illegals, health or otherwise. Just let them in. Let them in. And so they will. Full-scale invasion of the United States of America. Does this look to you like incompetence? Why? It's what is today? April 4th? Why? This was announced on Friday. Why do you announce this even? 2 months before, if you were really concerned about the border and border security and the morale among border agents, and you wanted to do away with Title 42, knowing that this is their last tool, it seems like you'd at least do it quietly. It seems like you'd at least talk to the border agents and say, look, the CDC has made its announcement. It's about the science. We're going to set aside. We know that this is one of your tools to send people back, but here's the way that it is. Instead, they just announce it. It's for all the world to hear. All of you people in Cuba that want to come in, just go to Mexico and you work your way right on up. It's not incompetence, is it? It's an attack. It's an attack. Barack Obama, he knows what he's doing. It's fundamental transformation. We're watching this. Obama, by the way, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, he's making his appearance in the White House for the first time. Some kind of legislation that or announcement that Joe Biden's making. So the puppet master, he's back. He's back, coming out into the open. Remember the clip where he talked about, I'd love to be in the basement in my sweats, just kind of, you know, pulling all of the puppet strings, making all the decisions, but not being out front. That's what he's doing. That's what he's been doing for 14, 15 months. This is playing out exactly the way he's envisioned. Meditate on the terror. What's happening at the southern border? What's happening in Europe? What's happening with Putin's march? This is from Breitbart yesterday. It says the National Fraternal Order of Police reported that 101 officers had been shot in the line of duty as of Friday so far this year. And its president said it was unlike anything he had ever witnessed. Police officers being shot. You know, the war on police, we wrote about that in 2015, remember? Tomorrow's News Today, thetrumpet.com, The Trumpet Magazine. And they were warring and war. Defund them. Oh, yes. And then there was just that momentary blip. Brian Sicknick. We love police. We love the Capitol Hill police for sure. We've got to expand their powers. We've got to expand Nancy Pelosi's powers to be able to investigate people all over the country because of January 6th. And then here comes this report. 101 officers shot in the line of duty this year so far. It says it's a 43% increase compared to the number of officers who were shot at the same time last year, and a 63% rise compared to the year before. Is Nancy Pelosi going to have a moment of silence in Congress for these 101 victims? They did it for Sicknick. They had a shrine for Sicknick. He died of a stroke. A stroke. These are police officers being shot in the line of duty. 43% higher than last year, 63% more than the year before. According to the FOP's monthly update, the officers shot, 17 were killed by gunfire. We're in the midst of a real crisis. The violence directed at law enforcement officers is unlike anything I've seen in my 36 years of law enforcement. That's someone who's in law enforcement. These are actual policemen dying of gunfire wounds in the line of duty. These are not individuals that had a stroke after a protest or committed suicide 2-3 weeks. As tragic as that is, to commit suicide 2-3 weeks after a protest, and then Pelosi and family come along and say, hey, these are all victims of Jan 6. Jan 6 was an insurrection. Jan 6, it nearly overturned the government of the United States, that four-hour protest. It says, last year was one of the most dangerous years for law enforcement, with more officers shot in the line of duty since the National Fraternal Order began recording this data. Very sad. Very tragic. It says here, it isn't hard to figure out that this puts the police and the public at great risk. These prosecutors and attorneys general need to be held accountable for what they are doing to our communities and how it's affecting people's lives, this individual says. God holds us all accountable down to every word that we speak, and he demands truth because he is truth. Pretty good quote. I'm not sure who that's from. Oh, that's from Franklin Graham. He's commenting at the end of this Breitbart piece about all these officers, 101 shot so far this year, in the line of duty, 17 killed, murdered, in the line of duty, out of control, just like the southern border. The lead singer of U2, remember that group, Bono? He visited the Capitol Hill police recently. I think it was over the weekend. Listen to what he had to say. This is clip 10.
I haven't been back since January 6th. And you guys, you know, saved America, as far as I'm concerned, from so much awfulness on that day. And I just want to say, people around the world really respect you.
They saved America, says this left-wing activist. He's there praising certain police officers. He's a champion for law enforcement. As long as they save people from Trump, as long as they save people from the bad orange man, then they're heroes. What about these victims on the streets of America? What about the out-of-control crime? What about the movement to defund the police? Police agencies. What about what's happening to Seattle, to Portland, to San Francisco? Look at the shooting in Sacramento over the weekend. 6 people die in a mass shooting. 6 people, drive by, crowds of people. Probably, I don't know all the victims, if they've caught who or whatever. I think I do have some news items about it. The Sacramento Bee says 6 people were killed and 12 others were injured in a mass shooting in downtown Sacramento, transforming a section of the city, normally teeming with nightlife, into a horrific crime scene of blood, shattered glass, and grieving relatives. The death toll and the number of wounded made the bloodbath in the vicinity of 10th and K Streets the worst mass shooting in Sacramento's history. It's like this in cities all over the world. Especially in the United States, the biggest cities. It's turning into a third world country in our big cities. God says we better meditate on this terror. Listen to the new mayor of New York City as the CBS host asks him about, you know, New York City has some of the strictest gun laws in all of the nation. And crime is out of control. Shootings out of control. It's just like what this law enforcement agency reports across the nation. 43% higher than last year. 63% than the year before. Listen to this exchange on CBS, clip 1.
New York City is, what, the highest number of shootings in a decade? More than 40% spike in homicides over the last 2 years. You've some of the toughest gun laws in the country. Where are all these weapons coming from?
That's a great question.
So why aren't the laws working?
For a number of reasons. We have a small number of gun dealers that are just skating the law. We're dealing with a problem with ghost guns.
Ghost guns, I guess, yeah. People are putting guns together and that sort of thing. We got to make that was in Joe Biden's statement, by the way. We've got to make it illegal these ghost guns. They're already illegal. How do you get rid of them? How do you go to the gang members and the thugs? Do it then. If it's so easy, you make a statement. Instead, you have Bono and all the other guys coming out and saying, we need more Steve Kerr, the coach of the Golden State Warriors. We need more gun control. We need more background checks. That would stop these thugs from having their drive-by shootings if they only had to go through a background check. I mean, this is insanity. It's just like the Title 42. We're following the science. And here we are about to go from 2 million illegals to 5 million. And you see the images. I tell you, meditate on terror. It's a good scripture to think about. Where's this leading? When you bring in an entire city of people in just a matter of months, a big city, I mean. Where is this leading? Well, there's a lot of other things. Donald Trump had a rally in Michigan on Saturday night, and it's interesting even to watch that and some of the politicians he's promoting, not just congressmen and women or senators, but also these state attorneys generals, the state secretary of states. So he really is getting down on the local level, knowing the rampant fraud that happened in 2020 in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, Georgia. This no doubt bothers the radical left as well. Maybe I can spend a little bit more time on that on tomorrow's show, if we have the time. The news segment generally does seem to move along pretty quickly. In any event, we'll come back and conclude today's show with a short Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
That verse I mentioned in the first segment, Isaiah 33, verse 18, says that we ought to meditate terror, just again, as I said earlier, to be prepared for what's coming. I mean, the Bible has so much to say about our thoughts, our focus. If your mind's eye is singular in its focus, like it says in Matthew 6, then you're going to have that right set of priorities. It's so easy, though, to be distracted away from reality, from what's actually happening in the world. And obviously, it's very easy to be distracted away from the vision that God gives to us in the Holy Bible as well. That vision of hope. That vision that stretches far beyond the terror that's now just in front of us. Herbert Armstrong, he wrote in his Ambassador College catalog from back in the 1950s, one of the educational objectives for the college, he said, was for students to develop right mental habits, intellectual curiosity, self-discipline, independent and clear thinking, and love of truth and scholarship. To develop right mental habits. That was one of the objectives, and it's certainly one of the objectives that we have today for our students at Armstrong College. Elsewhere, Mr. Armstrong said this, "Religiously, Ambassador is non-denominational, and while God's truth is vigorously taught as he gives it to us to understand, nevertheless, each student is given the full freedom of his own mind and heart and conscience, and stress is laid upon his God-given responsibility of independently, but with God's guidance, reaching his own right decision in all points of religious belief." We teach the truth. And Paul said in 1 Corinthians 1 that there should be no division in the body of Christ. But at the same time, we also teach here that we're free moral agents and that we have to come to willingly choose God's way, to choose to think the right way based on the law of God, to reason together with God, as it says in Isaiah 2, to reason together with God and to develop that sound mind. Notice what it says here in 2 Timothy 1. Verse 6, Paul says to Timothy, "Wherefore I put you in remembrance, that you stir up the gift of God, which is in you by the putting on of my hands." And then verse 7 continues, "For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." God gives to us a spirit of a sound, sensible, clear-thinking mind. Quite unlike what you see in the world today. People that just, well, like the clip I gave to you before the break. Why are we opening the floodgates to all of this illegal immigration? Well, we're following the science. The science says, let them all in. They're not a danger anymore, physically, because of the COVID. So now we can move on from COVID and just let the illegals run across the country. Just overrun the country. No country does this. No country that loves itself. No country that's concerned about the welfare of its citizens. Sure, the United States has welcomed in all kinds of legal immigrants over the past 2.5 centuries. But this, I mean, this is madness. This is not clear thinking. This is not a sound mind. This comes from another mind that's trying to even blot out the name of Israel. Trying to blot out even the nation of America. In Luke 6, notice this, verse 43, it says, "For a good tree," we touched on this point before in the first segment before too. It says, "For a good tree brings not forth corrupt fruit, neither does a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes." Now, with respect to forming, you know, the right sound thinking with God's help, what we dwell on in our minds, it really does matter. In a lot of ways, the human mind is like a garden, and it's going to bring forth what we meditate on. Now, it's different, obviously, than the way that we meditate terror, as I went through in the first segment. In that case, we're not meditating on it so that we can carry it out. We're preparing ourselves. It's like Jesus said, watch and pray always. Watch world events. Watch these horrific wars. Watch what man is doing to man, fellow man. And prepare and make yourself ready for what's coming. But with respect to character growth, verse 45, it says, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth that which is evil." It says, "For of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." In a lot of ways, we are what we think. We are what we meditate on. You listen to people talk these days, and they can go on and on and on, sometimes for hours, about things that they truly do love and think about and meditate on and cherish in their hearts and minds. They can know everything about something meaningless and trivial, or just something perverted and satanic, like I read about that that music show last night or the award show. Just say all of these satanic themes and people in the audience just cheering it on. They just love it. These poor people, what is going on in their minds? What are they doing to their minds? Matthew 12 and verse 33, it says, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. The tree is known by its fruit. That's what my father brings out here in the Prince of Rosh, or the Prince of Russia booklet, and all that he said in years past regarding Putin. Well, let's just look at his fruits. What has he done? What has been his history? He's been a dictator for quite some time now. And so really nothing that happens in Ukraine ought to shock us. We need to meditate terror to prepare for what's coming. But at the same time, if you were reading the trumpet back in 2004 or 2008, you would have known this would come about. You would have known in advance. Because we just looked at his fruits. My father just analyzed the fruits and thought, okay, this is not good. Verse 34, it says, O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. See, we can sometimes fool ourselves into thinking that, you know, what's going on in our minds, our thoughts, our attitudes, that we can keep them under wraps, that we can keep them secret. But sooner or later, those thoughts, those corrupt thoughts, are going to show. We all have them. We all have them, and we can fool human beings for a time, but we can't fool God. God, I mean, the eyes of the Eternal are upon us, as it says in Ezra. God can read the hearts and the intents of men. He knows our attitudes. He knows what we struggle with. And so when we go to work on removing sin from our lives, and we go through the rigmarole of cleaning out the garage or the house or the vehicles, the office, we want to give some thought to the spiritual de-leavening that we need to be going through as well, and how that starts in the mind, getting control of our minds, our thoughts, our meditations, with God's help. James 1. Verse 14, it says, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And then when the lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. That's James 1, 14 and 15. Let me read to you what Herbert Armstrong said in The Missing Dimension in Sex. He said, the temptation is not a sin. Sin is when the mind harbors the temptation, retains it, keeps thinking of it, keeps desiring it, until the desire conceives into the action of sin. See, that's why we've got to put it out of our minds. That's why, like my father says in the Overcomer booklet, we've got to lay siege to that bad habit or problem and get it out. It says, how does one avoid sin? By not retaining the desire, by pushing it out of mind immediately. It's just like the lesson of the spring holiday preparation. Get the leaven out of the house and replace it with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, the unleavened bread of righteousness. Fill up on the mind of God. Let this mind of Christ dwell in you. Search the scriptures daily like the Bereans. Fervently cry out to God. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. That's in James 5. Fill up on unleavened bread, spiritually speaking. It says here, but to start in the action of sin and think you can draw the line that you know when to stop is to commit sin. It says the time to prevent sin is before it starts. Don't let it run its course. If we're bombarded with those tempting thoughts, cry out to God for help in resisting against them, in removing them, in replacing them with godly thoughts This is another article by Mr. Armstrong, How to Prevent Sin. He says, when you think about the thing that tempts you, let your mind dwell on it. Turn it over in your mind, whether it be a desire to go someplace or do something or to have something you know is wrong. That thinking about it finally conceives, leads to action, and breeds sin. You finally do the thing you kept thinking about, wanting to do. If you keep thinking about it, after a while, you'll be unable to resist it. That's why you've lost so many of these struggles against sin. You kept thinking about it, desiring it, wanting it. See, it started in the mind. It started in the mind. And if we don't reject that temptation, that thought, that bad thought, if it turns into this long-going meditation on evil that we want to carry out, well, then it's going to translate into action. It's like Mr. Armstrong said, we need to eject those wrong thoughts and ideas just as soon as is possible. And so developing right mental habits, it really is all important to building godly character. Godly character in our lives. Mr. Armstrong used to define character as being the ability of a separate entity to come to a knowledge of what's right and true as opposed to the wrong and evil, and to choose the right. Even when you've got all of these pulls pulling you in the wrong direction, pulling you in the direction of evil, to choose the right. And then you bring God into that character development and growth, submitting your will to the Father's will. Well, let's just look at it's not in my notes here, but let's look at Matthew 26 in conclusion. This was Jesus Christ the night before he was crucified, and of course the night before he's agonizing to God in prayer. He's crying out to God in prayer, and he's asking his disciples to pray along with him, and of course they were very weak at this point. They didn't yet have God's Spirit. Verse 38 of Matthew 26, it says, then said he unto them, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry you here and watch with me. And he went a little further, and he fell on his face, and he prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. So Christ prayed that his will, he didn't want to go through this trial. This was, in a lot of ways, it was his darkest hour. He knew what was coming. His human will wanted to somehow sidestep this. But in the end, he submitted to the will of the Father. This was God's will, that his Son be that perfect sacrifice, the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, so that we could have an opportunity to be born into God's family. This is the perfect example that Jesus Christ set for us. 1 Peter 2:21 says this. He set us a perfect example, and if we follow in his steps, then we subject our will to the will of the Father. Verse 40 says, and he came to his disciples, and he found them asleep, and he said to Peter, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The Spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh, it says, the flesh is weak. It is weak. The Spirit is willing. We can have a willing heart. I want to do what God says to do, but the flesh and those fleshly pulls, they're so strong, and the flesh is so weak. This is why we need God's help and power. This is why we need to concentrate on even the littlest of things and really set our minds, like Colossians 3, 1 and 2. I think that's later in my notes. Maybe we'll get to that on tomorrow's study. But set our mind on the things above and really get a cleaner heart and mind to begin with. And then really go about getting up from our prayer kneeling in prayer, I should say, and then obeying these precious laws of God. Hopefully we can continue this study later this week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, just send us an email, td@thetrumpet.com. www.thetitlefortwo.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.